that's where the agreement ends, because of the doubts by Doug Dillon as to whether this is negotiable or not.
It would take too long a time, or the very fact of the negotiation would be regarded as an additional sign of weakness. My concern, as I've said, is the one that I've already said to you. And secondly, I think there's so much disparity between the attitudes of the banks and governments of Europe, where the British and the Belgians and the Spanish are all wanting all gold, and the Germans hold a lot of dollars, and the French move from 65 to 75, and everybody may think, my God, this is the time. Quite obviously, if everybody wants gold, we're all going to be ruined, because there's enough gold to go around. Now, if they would all assume a reasonable risk in the sense of holding dollars, there'd be no risk. But the very fact that there is not the feeling of a community acceptance of risk, you know, it's a lot different if we all said, well, we'll all take a piece of a venture than we will if we're all competing, really, to protect our own bank or national interest. Now, I don't know enough about money to know whether there's a possible to work out an arrangement quickly enough that would be more satisfactory than the ones we now have. The only thing is knowing how precious amount of finance ministers and how British, I'm convinced the British, either government or important influences in Britain, are trying to force us value, either because they think the pound is going to be devalued or because of their own gold. We got a letter from a very well-known correspondent, European correspondent, a friend of mine did, who's been in London, that says that we haven't any idea of what the pressure is and the desire on the dollar and how, you know, the things you were talking about, the sort of tax on the dollar, must be something. But anyway, so that I don't feel that even though they've done exceptionally well, that we have it as strong as we should have, considering the shocks we're going to get in the next 2 years, either domestically or something else. So I wonder whether, looking over that, where you would come down.
Well, I can tell you in a nutshell, I would be negative to the approach. My reaction to it is that it would be interpreted by most of the conservatives, and I think you have to take them into account in this, just as well as the liberals. And I think it would be interpreted by most of them as receivership on the part of the United States. Now, that's the simplest way I could put it, that a proffer for this sort of an agreement. Now, what we've been doing with the central banks is quite different, because there you've been having not a contractual understanding, or a political understanding, if you want to put it that way, but just a recognition of the fact that access to gold carries with it a responsibility, which means that you have a responsibility for the whole operation if you're going to just grab gold because it's convenient for you to grab it. Now, I think we are making enormous progress in this country. I think that under the leadership of your administration, that it's amazing how much progress we have made. Now, we're now dealing at the present time with more of a political problem than an economic problem. We've got 90% of our own people talking about devaluation. I may exaggerate when I say 90%, but I was in Wall Street last Friday. And, I know a few people down there, and I only talk to those I think are responsible and that I've had some contact with. And most everybody recognizes we're making progress on it, but there's this constant talk of, well, we're going to have to go in for controls. We're going to have to find some way to put the V on people to do this. And I just think it would be a sad thing to, when we made all this progress, to appear to be soliciting an agreement that Rolly Cromer tried to get me. This is just he tried to get me this past weekend to come over for a week, spend the weekend. I'm very fond of him. I like him very much. But his idea has been, well, if you just agree to give us $2 billion of gold, I shouldn't be saying this, that we have a fraternity of central bankers, but you just put pressure on your people to distribute $2 billion of gold around here, maybe we could at the political level work out some understanding. Well, this is at a time when I honestly think that the weakest currency probably in Europe is the pound.
That's right.
We have a trade surplus of over $5 billion. Now, I don't think we can expect to maintain as good a surplus as that over any long period of time, because we're all struggling in this problem of productivity. But the figures for the UK are just out, and I had a pretty good idea about a week ago, and they show that they lost further ground this last month.
In what? In
and
the cost?
Their exports went up, but their imports went up more than their exports went up, so their adverse balance was larger. Well, now, this problem in the financial parlance, and that's all I'm trying to deal with here, is not dissimilar to the same thing that we were having in 51, 52, 53, when the political group were saying, the problem is not inflation, the problem is the Cold War. Now, we can't let the central bankers and the businessmen, most of whom are lunkheads, with the fetishes that they have, interfere with what's necessary for to fight the Cold War. Yet when inflation gets ahead of you, it leads to deflation. That's the only reason you fight inflation. Now what we're getting now, and this is not directed toward this draft, please don't misunderstand me on that. I haven't studied this draft carefully enough to, but what I have seen rising in Europe, I was over there in May and spent 2 weeks, matter of fact, I sat next to Adenauer one night at a little dinner, and the Germans were propelling this business along the lines of, well, I tell you, what we really ought to do is have a meeting of Kennedy and Adenauer and De Gaulle and Macmillan and stop fussing around with this business of meeting these balance of payments problems in one certain or another. Now, the people that I talk with in Germany are just as unhappy about that as they can be. They don't say so. As I've told Walter Hiller a number of times, I said they talk one way sometimes to him and another way sometimes to me, if you want to put it that way. But in this financial sphere, I'm absolutely convinced that until it may be that these are all fetishes. I make no bones about that. I've been a lifelong student of gold and the operations of the exchange market, and I happen to believe that we could remove and should remove when we get an opportunity the specific gold cover. I don't think it's necessary. I've thought that for a long time. In 1945, I worked hard to get the cover reduced from 45 and 35 to the present 25, and I don't think there's any necessity for it at the present time. But the only reason we have the gold is to use it. But we ought not to, at this juncture. You see, the basic change that occurred to me in Vienna, this is the simplest way I could put it in my thinking, is that after having been the lender to the world for a long time, as I told Doug, we were over there negotiating for the first time in my experience where the other people had the cards. And I think Doug did a perfectly marvelous job of negotiating. You know, I've never seen a man, never worked with a man that I had more respect for, and pulling together what I would say one hand after another, where the cards were bad and the French and the Italians and the Germans were more or less jumping up and down and saying, well, now you're in the soup, and we'll go along with you on increasing the resources of the International Monetary Fund, but we want to tell you on what terms we would let you draw if you have to draw. And I must admit that galls me as an American. But I saw that what had happened was that we had shifted in the period of since the end of the war to where we were now a possible borrower instead of the lender to the world. And yet, the most effective thing that you have said at any time, in my judgment, was what was on Telstar, where you really said to them, and this really shook the exchange markets of the world, we could solve this problem day after tomorrow if we just stopped our foreign aid, or words to that effect. I was paraphrasing loosely. Now, I checked with some of my friends in Wall Street. That went right straight through the exchange markets, every place, because they all know that. They've got a sense of guilt on this, on that aspect of it. Now, I just think, to sum up here, that we would have difficulty negotiating this sort of thing, certainly in a short period of time before the Monetary Fund and Bank meeting here. You always have a build-up for that. And my best judgment and advice to you, and I have no, is simply that we ought to be alert to the opportunities to impress upon the central bankers that this is a responsibility of theirs as well as ours.
Everything is of it. How do you, if the central banker is looking after his own problem, and he's not, by the nature of the way we have it now organized, the German has to look for his own, for Germany's problem, and we might have the bilateral negotiations, but they're not at the political level. When I say the political level, they're not between Adenauer and myself, where I'm saying to the Germans, we keep our troops there, providing you're willing to at least assume some share of the risk. So there is not the sense of a communal acceptance of the risk. There's the competition. I mean, just staying when you sat here saying, well, why is it the British won't hold any of your dollars? And the Belgians, we are holding them, but then we see that they're not, and they're supposed to be your intimate friend and ally. So there is this competition, in a sense, to protect themselves. And I'm not sure that the proposal put forward has merit. The thing is, I would like to see some way where they would all agree that, that the steps we're now taking give us some assurance that the dollar's going to be all right, and that they would be willing to hold dollars. They must understand they can't all have gold. But the trouble is now is they all think that there's not enough gold to go around, so we better get in early.
No, I don't really think so. I think what they think is that they're not completely sold, that we are going to manage our affairs in such a way that they, that confidence in the dollar is justified. Now, that always puts pressure on the central banker. I happen to have a very high regard and some confidence in Blessing, for example. And I'm sure that's what he's pressed by his political people with respect to. Now, I think that what you've got to realize there is that, that they're afraid that there might be an embargo on gold, of course. The biggest disservice that was done to us in this area was, this isn't done politically, but George Humphrey, who really didn't have the faintest idea what he was talking about, went up to the Hill one day and said, well, of course, if we got down to this level, I'd just slap an embargo on it. Well, it's taken us 5 years to get away from that. I still have to get letters from people saying, well, has Humphrey got any influence still in this thing, you see? I mean, that's the type of thing. Now, I know that that some of these things look like fetishes. But in the absence of war or near war, you really can't change the mechanics of finance by political agreements.
Of course, this agreement wouldn't change any of the mechanics. It would simply formalize on a somewhat expanded basis exactly what the Treasury and you are doing now.
But it's the mere formalization, Ted, my judgment, that causes you the difficulty. And I may see ghosts there that aren't there, but all of my experience in this field has led me to believe that it's the formalization of that type of thing that leads to trouble.
If we propose it, but suppose the initiative, if we can, is there some way of getting the initiative to come from elsewhere?
Well, it's awfully difficult because these people are, this is a tough, rough, mean gang. There's very little altruism.
That's it, but that's true. But that's because, I don't know, so, I mean, they're businessmen who are by nature conservative and who are interested in their private, they have no interest in carrying a broader burden for the sake of the NATO alliance. Instead, they've got the problem of their own bank and their own, and I recognize that. But it's what I'd like to see, I wonder whether if the burden were put on a wider basis, a political basis in a sense, where the Germans said to Blessing, well, we recognize you're carrying more dollars, perhaps you ought to, particularly in view of the way the British are acting and the French, we ought to step up our gold percentage. What is the gold percentage of the Germans right now?
About 30%.
That's damn low.
It is, indeed.
I don't know how he got the guts to do it, view of what the French have done, the Belgians, the British. But if he felt that he was doing it because it was a political judgment of the Germans that they wanted to I'm sure people are saying to him, why are you carrying 70% dollars when the French are only carrying 25%, the British 10%, the Belgians none, and the Spanish none? You better start moving your... Well, now, if the French and Germans ever started to move it up to 50% or 60%, we could find ourselves in terrible trouble. Now, why does he not do it, Ash? I think it's an awful burden to put on them, the Germans, to unilaterally accept it, while the French and the British and the Belgians, supposedly, are in an ally vote.
We've got to make a distinction with the British, because they are a reserve currency. The British and the pound and the dollar are the only two reserve currencies. I'm not defending the British on this, but I mean, they do have with their sterling. They had a reserve currency long before we had a reserve currency. We got thrown into the reserve currency by accident, you see. We inherited the markets of the world at the end of the war, and in the first 7 years after, well, I illustrated this to you one day by saying when I was president of the Export-Import Bank, I used to testify against tied loans regularly, and used to receive applause on the Hill from it. Well, I realized what would happen to me now if I went up to testify that way, the difference being that then our suppliers were overburdened with orders, and they were glad to have somebody take an order to help them in the delivery. Therefore, it was easy to espouse the doctrine of untied loans. Well, we went through this period, and since about 1957, we have had a slippage in American industrial productivity. Some of my business friends get mad at me when I say this, but my best illustration of it is several textile mills in Japan can pay roughly the same wages, I've been told by some people I have confidence in, that we pay, and still undersell us over here. Now that's quite a marked change. Yet we have been doing an awfully good job overall. We wouldn't have a trade surplus of 5.2 in the month of June if we weren't doing a pretty good job of competing generally. But we've got to improve our plant and equipment, you see, and continue. Now what we are dealing with on the productivity trade picture and the finance picture is partly our own people. That's why I say it's partly a political problem rather than an economic problem. We doubt that we'll be able to continue this way, and this is because we've gotten all tied up in the debate, dialogue is the word, as to whether we can solve all the problems of the world by budget deficits and easy money. Well, now, I think the rank and file of the people around the world in the business community in all countries don't believe that, because it's been tried before. And I'm not against a budget deficit when I talk that way. And I'm not a Senator Byrd man. I've talked to Senator Byrd on these things. I think I understand that I have great respect for the sort of budget direction that Dave Bell is giving. But I think you can magnify the virtues of a deficit. I defended Dave Bell. He wrote me a letter here the other day from a group in Wall Street on this very point. They were making him out as to believe that the best thing in life is to have a sizable budget. But that's the be-all and end-all of life, instead of something that, of course, we'd like to have surpluses. Now, the Germans got ahead of us here because the word surplus has dropped out of our vocabulary in the last few years. But the Germans had a surplus come because their revenues exceeded what they expected to take in. The result is every little German community in West Germany is building a Kur garden or a swimming pool or something to dispose of the money. Now, you can spend surplus as well as deficit. Now, I think we're a rich country. I think we can afford whatever is required for national defense and for our security, for our social security at home. I'm just as liberal as the next person on that. I really believe that, but I've been arguing with Mr. Patman all afternoon here. That's why I was late. I've had four and a half hours with him today. And I say to him, he was talking to me about, he said, there are people, you know, who have a mystical belief in high interest rates. Well, I said, said, Mr. Fatman, I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been coming down here for 15 years now, and I have never said that I believed in high interest rates as the cure-all. But I said, there are also people who have a mystical belief in low interest rates. And I know from experience in the 30s that low interest rates have not produced all the things that people think they will. We can get low interest rates. In the last year, we've had lower interest rates than we've had for a long time. And I've had splendid cooperation from Bob Rosa on the debt management side of it by making debt management and Federal Reserve policy complementary. But you get it because you take savings. And when the government runs a deficit, you don't try to take to create. Mr. Fatman gets mad at me when I say the printing press. Print the money to cover that deficit. Now, we have a managed currency, and there's no reason why we shouldn't manage it. But if we manage it so that we take this deficit and translate it into just money, we are diluting the currency of everyone. Whereas if we permit the only adjustment that we have under these circumstances, and in the first half of 1962, we didn't have to resort to this. And this has been testifying all afternoon. We've accepted whatever risk there is in helping the domestic economy. Now, you asked me the other day, and I'm afraid I wasn't persuasive, perhaps, but I honestly believe that there are times when forcing easy money actually retards growth and causes unemployment. I've seen it work. I happen to believe that easy money would correct everything. 1930, 31, 32. I was a student at Columbia University, and I was one of the strongest New Dealers that ever came out. I used to go up in the Bronx and make speeches for Franklin Roosevelt. And I really believed that we could solve everything. All of the problems were in the Federal Reserve. I read the records over here today, and I still think they made some grievous mistakes. I haven't changed on that, but I was convinced by 1935 that we were not going to put these people back to work by forcing money down the throat of people who didn't want to borrow. Now today, the thing that bothers me is we've had a very successful adjustment in the stock market with a minimum of real disruption. Lots of paper values lost, but very little real loss from that. But we are undergirding in a great many areas weak real estate situations because money is so plentiful and there's so much pressure to place these mortgages that a lot of situations, I was in Denver, St. Louis, Kansas City, and I talked to the people who were placing them here and there. They say, well, sure, we've got the money. We don't know what to do with it. It's coming in here, and while this doesn't look like too good, this operation over here at this level, if we can get a 5.75% mortgage on it, why, interest rates probably go down, and we at least have got this investment, and we'll take a chance with the growth of the country. Well, the country is going to grow. And no matter what happens, nobody can persuade me to sell this country short. I'm just as sure as I'm sitting here that we may have little adjustments here and there, but we are going to have a tremendous expansion of development, both of population and growth in the country. But I don't believe we help it by avoiding the process of saving and investment. And under certain circumstances, the saver is entitled to a return as well as the lender. Now, I was interested in the Ways and Means Committee last week, Thursday afternoon. I was up there for 3 hours, and I told Wilbur, I said, I'm glad to come, but I want you to know I'm going to neither support nor oppose a tax cut. I think that puts me in the political arena, and I have my own ideas. I said, the president asked me, I tell him directly, but I said, I'm not going to get out on this area. But I said, I really think that we have supplied mortgage funds and kept lower interest rates here successfully, and I want to continue to do that as long as I can. Better than any time since I've been in the federal. And a little fellow from Tennessee named Howard Baker, I don't know very well, got up and made the best speech. I wish that somebody had put it on the record, in which he said, you know, I have a $4 million bank, a little tiny bank. And I thought it was a terrible thing when the Federal Reserve permitted us to pay up to 4% for savings accounts. And he says, all the bankers are sore as pups about it because they're not earning too much. Well, he says, I want to tell you that for the first time in my shock. And we have had better municipal finance in Tennessee than we've had for a long time because there are savings available for this. Now, there are always two ways that you can create this money. You can have the bank write it up. You go to a bank by on one side of the ledger or the other. That's bank-created money. Or you can persuade John Doe to deposit some money there, and then give him a rate of interest that makes it worthwhile for him to deposit it there. I think around 4% has been pretty successful. I think that our savings bond people through the years, at one time I was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury with John Snyder over here, and I got myself all worked up emotionally about the problem, and I said, John, I can't sign your report. Well, he said, you don't have to, you're not secretary. Well, I said, all right then. But I said, we are telling all of these people that we've got the best investment in the world, and we have in one sense. But we're letting inflation heat up. There are advantages here. And I said, I think we've got to adjust the savings bond picture a little bit. Well, we did. I think they may face that problem in the next couple of years here in the Treasury again. But I don't think we want to get too high rates. We're not seeking high rates. We're seeking an equilibrium rate. That's what we're, and we're trying to get it as stable as possible. But I don't think you can, on these forces, I don't think we've yet developed the techniques. We've made some progress, but we haven't developed the techniques to tell the tides to roll back when we want them to. Now, the tides are big. The tides in this international financial operation are very big, and we've been led a lot of people a la Bob Triffin, whom I like very much, persuade us that there is a shortage of gold in the immediate situation. There isn't. That I will, nobody's been able to persuade me of. I've talked to them about it. There may be. That's a different story. I think we can create the credit for that. I see no reason the Federal Reserve can create credit. And I have no intention, Mr. Senator Proxmire and I battle for an hour on this. He says, the president's suggesting the possibility of a tax cut, and you say you'll finance it all out of savings. You're going to take it away. I said, Senator, I've been through this over and over and over again. I said, it isn't a mathematical operation. This has been the most difficult field and yet an interesting one for me. I was good at mathematics. I don't say that boastfully, but it's nice to get an answer. I've been working for the last 20 years in an area where there are no mathematical answers and where statistics, to use the phrase of Gilbert Chesterton that I like so much, statistics are used frequently as a drunkard uses a lamppost for support and not for illumination. And you have constantly, I sit down, I've played around with these things a little bit, I've got a good staff over here, I can almost prove to you almost any point I want at times by a little bit of playing around with these statistics. But the problem of human nature that's involved in this business process and saving an investment doesn't work that way.
I want you to lower the interest rates some more, I think. There is a deficit. He wants it to be funded out of what?
He wants us to create money to.
How much do you lose of the impact if you want to run a deficit because of the deflationary pressure? How much do you lose by financing it out of savings as opposed to financing it out of?
Well, this is a very moot question. I think in the first place, there's going to be a normal growth in the money supply. I eliminate that. I figure Henry Royce is always trying to pin me down to 3%, and I won't be pinned down, but I think there ought to be a steady growth in the money supply. We've operated on that basis. You can remove that from it. Now, when you take bona fide savings and you assume you're making a tax provision here that is eventually going to create more revenue for the country by helping the business climate and the business turnover. I believe that upwards in the neighborhood of 60 to 70% of it can come out of savings without taking dollar for dollar away from it. It's a matter of fact, I think it contributes to this overall confidence in the economy. Now, I've never seen, as I said to you the other day in that brief talk, I've never seen a period of real business expansion and growth and development that hasn't been accompanied by slightly higher interest rates. That's just normal. Our job under those circumstances is to keep it from being beyond slightly higher. Now, I've also never seen a real decline in business that hasn't been accompanied by snowballing decline in interest rates. And that's not the sort of decline in interest rates that I want to see. If we had a major depression in the next year or so, I can assure you there'll be no pressure on the Federal Reserve with respect to interest rates. They'll come down of their own accord. Now, that's the... how you keep this equilibrium in what is a moving stream, I don't know. But I happen to think that it's the flow of funds that's important. Bob Rosa and I think see eye to eye on this, and that's the important thing. Now, in the early part of your administration, in January, February, and March of 1961, I reversed my position, as you know, on buying the bonds. I said, and I do it under any pressure. I talked to Jim Tobin, and I said, well, I'm not sure I have the answer. I can assure you that I think that humility is the most important thing in this area. I sometimes think I have too much of it, but I don't think that you can be lacking in convictions. And if you have humility in the sense, as I told Mr. Cotman here, I said, Mr. Cotman, I respect you, but I said, you're not responsible for the Federal Reserve Board. You wouldn't respect me if I didn't call my shots, as I saw. And he smiles. We get along very well. I never had any real trouble. Once in a while, he accuses me of making money out of the open market account, and I just smile and say, well, Mr. Cotman, I'm sorry you have such a poor opinion of me, and when I don't get mad, he usually comes around and apologizes to me later. But of course, his thesis is easier money all the time. And I think that it's a fetish. It would be just as bad to have a fetish on the other side. What you're seeking here is equilibrium. And you're seeking really a reasonable rate of return for the saver, and a reasonable rate for borrowers and for business. And under those circumstances, you will get the maximum of flow of funds.
Well, the only thing is that we're going to have a chance maybe to talk Monday, but the only thing that, as we give India a loan at 0.5% and a 10-year grace, which no bank would ever do, but we do it as a matter of governmental policy. The only thing that I'm wondering is whether in this international, whether we, by introducing into this very tough business where 0.5% of interest become vitally important and where everybody's looking out for themselves, we introduce this question of national policy and the Atlantic community concept so that there's some forbearance. After all, that's what we're asking them now. This operation which Bob Roser is carrying out, the board is carrying out, is an attempt to work out these arrangements on a unilateral basis. I'm just wondering whether we got the governments more in it, whether we would have them be willing to accept what they would not ordinarily want to accept. I don't know why Blessing keeps it at 30-35%, why he doesn't someday get up and probably pass a dividend or something, and as the stock market goes down another 20, he might figure, well, I better go to 50%, because friendship going up again, or the Italians are moving up, and I better get up to at least 50%, which I don't know how much gold that would take from us. Well, I mean, I don't think Bob Rosa can keep it from doing it. Maybe Adenauer could, or if I asked Adenauer, but I don't know whether he's looking out just for his own problem, looking at this in a cold-blooded banker's way. I would say, hell, I'd better get up to 50%.
Or it might be what the things where George Ball is, he might become involved in something in Southeast Asia or someplace where Adenauer would say, well, I don't agree with it anyway. But then it'd be too late. You'd need to have the agreement ahead of time.
Well, that's it. I think we ought to think a little more, but as I say, I don't know why do you think Blessing keeps his goal so low compared to the others?
I think it's because he has real confidence that we are making an effort to manage our finances, and we will come out of it. He also has less confidence in the pound than he has in the dollar. And I think that weighs very heavily with him at the present time. I think he's been under some pressure. I've never asked him to do anything on this, but I think Blessing is a fellow who really feels a little sense of guilt, if you want to put it that way, about the past Hitlerian excursion, and there are not many Germans that do.
That's a pretty...
it's a very thin reed to lean on.
When he sees the French and the British and the French... Well, anyway, I just think
Well, I apologize for talking so
much. No, it's just that...
Central Bank credit line, if you want to put it that way, right up to the time where